joyful manifestation is being broadcast live on iHeart, iTunes, and many, many other stations.
Hi, this is Sugandhi Iyer for the Joyful Manifestation Show, the High Vibration Show. Welcome back. As you're aware, we have two great positive vibration shows happening, one after the other. One happens, the Good Fortune Show, and one is the Joyful Manifestation Show, happening every alternate Friday, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Today we have someone very, very interesting, and her name is Britt Elders. Britt Elders, she's an investigator and also the author of the book UFO Contact from the Pleiades. She is the CEO for ShirleyMaclaine.com. We all know about the fantastic, great actress Shirley MacLaine. We all grew up hearing her name, watching her movies. And we have here Miss Elders. Britt, are you there?
I am. Thank you for the invitation. I'm looking forward to tonight.
Oh, we are so honored to have you, you know, to
thank you.
To have somebody who has written on the subject, UFO Contact from the Pleiades. And I understand it was two books and it became one for easy reading. Anything you want to say about the books?
Yes, it was originally published in 1978. The volume one was. Volume one followed a year later, or volume two did. This time, for the 45th anniversary, we put the two books together. We had Jaime Maussan, a journalist from Mexico.
It became one.
Shirley MacLaine, the preface, or the other way around. And I added information throughout the book at the beginning and at the end. So now it's volume one, beautiful coffee table book, 200 pages, 10 for the 40, 10 inches. And it has some of the most amazing photographs you will ever see in it. On a journal.
And Miss Elder, one. What do I call you?
Please call me Britt. Britt.
So Britt,
to begin,
I understand all this started at
beautiful.
Please correct me in case I'm putting out anything wrong.
Sure.
But all this started at a time where people could
see in
mess with photos and videos, like the way they mess now with stuff. Am I right about that? That some of the photos and videos could not have been messed with?
Absolutely. Well, the man that took the photographs, his name was Edward Billy Meyer, and he took hundreds of pictures. But back when he took them, which the contact started in 1975, we didn't have Photoshop. We didn't have a personal computer. Computers back then had green screens, and you had to be a computer engineer and a whiz bang to figure out how to do anything in a computer. We didn't have cell phones that had cameras that could capture remarkable things. Billy had a 35 millimeter camera and an old 8 millimeter movie camera. And that's how he took the material that he took, was with this broken camera and with an 8 millimeter movie camera. And no, there was no way back then to duplicate what he was giving us. And we know that because we spent 7 years in an investigation all around the world, laboratories everywhere, looking at all of the evidence, which was the photographs, the movie footage, the sounds of the craft. He actually had audio recordings of those sounds and metal samples that he was given by the Pleiadians.
So may I ask you, why are they called the Pleiadians? Is it something that the Pleiadians call themselves? Because I've heard of the Pleiadians, and there are people who say they channel the Pleiadians. But is it something that the Pleiadians call themselves, or is it something that we humans, you know, we just want to conveniently say it?
It's our identification with them because they come from the star system of the Pleiades, specifically the sun that their planet rotates around is Era. And that's our name for it. But throughout history, the Pleiades have been recognized as a very important star system, always the bringer of some type of knowledge. And this is not just one culture. These cultures all around the world in antiquity revered the Pleiades. And they're a very tiny little system. You can see them if you look up in the night sky and find Orion's belt. They're right in front of Orion's belt. And your eye will go to them naturally. They're sparkly. There's seven of them, but we only see six. In days past, hundreds of years ago, they could see all seven, but we no longer can. We can only see six with the naked eye. It's a beautiful little star cluster. So the reference to the Pleiadians is because that is the star system they come from.
So why is it that they selected this humble Swiss farmer, Billy Meyer?
Yeah.
Why is it that they selected him for this? And of course, you know, you wouldn't actually know the reason, but you would definitely have a guess about why they would select.
I have a pretty good idea because Billy had face-to-face contacts with these beings from the Pleiades. And they told him they recognized his energy pattern from past incarnations. So they knew him from a past life when he was a Pleiadian, when he carried that same energy that they carry. And that's how they knew him. But they did study him for 10 years before they began the contacts. This was to make certain that his energy would be compatible with theirs and that he would be comfortable receiving both the photographs, the audio, and the metal samples that he was given, and that he wouldn't feel bad about being a messenger to the world to get us to wake up and realize we're not the only thinking beings in the universe. Now, this is what they told him. And being around Billy, I can believe it. He does have a very different energy. He's a very earthy, humble man, but he has this harmony about him that is so beautiful. And it's gentle and it's kind and it's curious, which I love as an investigator. And no matter what I'm investigating, you have to have that spark of curiosity that propels you forward. And Billy is curious about everything. He's not educated as we think of education. He didn't have a book learning or a college education at all, but he's worldly. He's smart. He's traveled all through the Middle East and Europe. He's met many, many, many people. And he has that sort of innate common sense that some of us have lost today. And he's still got it. And it still works for him.
And Britt, him being who he is, did he ever tell you during any one of his conversations with you if he has come in contact with other Pleiadians who have incarnated as humans, if he has recognized anybody else, because he might be knowing now how to recognize people.
Yeah, he has not come in contact with other Pleiadians in a human incarnation right now. He has met with other Pleiadians besides Semyasa, the initial contact, but they all come and go in their craft. He has said, he told us this, that the Pleiadians explained to him that Earth humans carry so much, I hate to use the word positive and negative, but we carry so much negative, so much baggage with us, that the Pleiadians don't like to be around our energy because we don't have that harmonious aspect within ourselves. And so it makes it difficult for them to be around us. And as Billy said, they turn around in their head. It literally makes them sick to be around us for any long period of time. So when they visit for a short period of time and only with individuals they completely relate to, which Billy is the only one that he's aware of that they're visiting now.
And Britt, we would call it in today's word, emotional toxin. Right.
Absolutely. Or extension. Yes. They call
I
it
mean,
old sin.
they keep talking of pollution and different types of pollution, but nobody's really paying attention to emotional pollution that everybody,
That's the
including the TV
important.
and the radio, are putting out.
Yeah, it's so true. This is the important one, though, is because, and the Pleiadians talk to him about this. They're very concerned about us because they look at us like their little brothers and sisters. They say their forefathers were our forefathers. And they're very concerned that we're wrapped up in all of the things that don't matter. We're wrapped up in our technology to an extreme. We're wrapped up in the material world, playing keep up with the Joneses, things like that. We're not working on our true selves. We're not finding that harmony within and the harmony with creation. We're too busy for that anymore.
And Britt, that's why we have the Joyful Manifestation Show
Yes.
and the Good Fortune Show, because I feel guided myself to put out good energy into the world and people who believe in this in the higher vibration. So hopefully the Pleiadians will be comfortable with us, right?
I think so.
We decided, okay, we just want good stuff over here. We want people to listen to good stuff. But Britt, I do wanted to ask you all through here. What made you an investigator, and what are you an investigator of? Did you start off with Myers, Billy Myers, or was it even before him?
No, it was before him. First of all, I've been writing since I was a kid. I wrote my first novel when I was 8 years old. It was just writing is a part of me. I love to write. But after I wrote the novel, I knew I did not like fiction. I had to go after fact. And that's kind of when I became an investigator. I had to find the details on everything. But initially, my husband and I, before we got involved with this case, we had a company called Intercept. And that was an investigative company that dealt with Fortune 500 companies and financial institutions all around the world. What we did was we kept them from being eavesdropped on and wiretapped. So we had quite an investigative reputation. A friend of ours brought these photographs to us, the Meyer photographs. We looked at them and went, they're too good to be true. And then we waited a while. We did not want to risk our reputation. So we waited a while. And before long, he brought more photographs. He talked to us again. And we had to go to Europe on business. And we decided to drop in on Billy Meyer. We thought we'd be there one day, figure out how he did it. How did he make these incredible photographs? We were there 5 days and we left with the photographs, the movie footage, the metal samples, and the audio recordings, as well as dozens of witness statements of people that had seen the ship or seen something that was unique and unusual. We came back and we got started at that point in a 7-year investigation. It took that long to use the technology we had of that time. This is back in the 70s, and take it to as many labs as we could. No one was able to duplicate what Meyer had given us. No one could say, hey, that's a UFO or that's a Pleiadian ship. And they all said, we don't know what it is, but we can't duplicate it and we don't know how it was done. So at that point, we had some pretty strong evidence and we decided as soon as we started getting initial evidence in and the results were great, put it in a book and let people make their own decision. Let them be informed. As an investigator, both my husband Lee and I felt that it wasn't our responsibility to tell people how to think or how to believe, but just to put our findings out there and let it go from there. Let them find their way.
And Britt, when I listen to you, there must have been this moment where you had this shift, maybe from, when you initially approached the Billy Myers case, and this is just me, this is not what Britt told me, this is just me thinking, you might have approached it with doubt, right? The first thing, how can this be
Skeptic,
true, right?
yes.
How can this be even true attitude? But then You were given evidence, which you investigated thoroughly from your side, and then you came up with, maybe there's something to this after all, and then let's put this out for people to decide. And that's a big step in trust when you stake your reputation as investigators, you're fact finders, right? And you stake that reputation and you put it out there, and then you take a chance, you take a risk, and from there was no going back for you, was there?
No. Once you're into UFOs, you're never out of them. The thing that really got me was the metal, because the metal had a rare earth element called thulium in it. Thulium is very, very costly to extract, and it's very rare. How would Meyer know to put this element into that metal? And the element was, or the metal was made differently. So you had different elements that were pure. You had metal, and then it was separated by a crystalline structure, and then more metal. It was a cold fusion process instead of the way we normally work with metals, which is to melt it all down and pour it out.
Light.
Yeah, there was no signs of heating with it. When we got the reports in on the metal, and we found that 42 different scientists had looked at it and said, I can't do this. I don't know how it could be made on this planet. We had to say, wow, this is really something important, and put it out there, let everybody decide for themselves. And yes, it was rough on her. Our reputation took a hit for a little while, but then we found that a lot of the bankers that we worked with and some of the company heads, corporate heads we worked with had seen something, but they were afraid to say anything about it. They didn't want to risk their reputation either. Back in the 70s, UFO was not a common term. You had Betty and Barney Hill, you had Travis Walton. That was kind of it. And everything that people ascribed to UFOs had a tendency to be negative. And yet this case had such a beautiful positive message that it threw a lot of people. They really had to think, wow, maybe they're not all just trying to abduct us. Maybe there is such a thing as a contactee like Billy Meyer is.
Maybe the Hollywood movies want to make money out of UFO stories, and they
I
want to
think you're
abduct
right.
us and destroy Earth, and then some hero and heroine save Earth.
Yeah.
That
Yeah.
whole
And
just.
it's good to keep people in a state of fear. They seem to be, easily controlled when they're a little fearful.
Correct. And I always say if they want to destroy us, they would have long ago.
I
We're
agree
not
with
that
you.
advanced that we could stop that.
I agree. I
Right.
absolutely agree. And they've been here for eons. They're throughout history. All of the oral histories of the ancient people, all of the indigenous people, they all have cultures that relate to star beings, brothers from the sky, that came and helped them, taught them something, showed them something to improve themselves. If we would look backwards in time, we would see that there's really nothing to be afraid of, besides maybe ourselves.
Exactly. And this case is steeped in controversy. How do you react when someone says it's not real? Do you take it personally,
Oh
or
no.
do you just have like a higher, you go to a higher level and
Yeah.
see that, maybe they're not where I am, something like that.
Well, that's sometimes. Sometimes I have to ask the question, why do you think it's not real? Tell me why. Most of them say they read it somewhere, they heard it somewhere. No. Who do you know that analyzed this material? Who do you know that took photographs to U of A, University of Arizona, Dr. Michael Malin, who is the head of the photo lab down there, still does amazing photo work. Eric Eliason, USGS, head of the Mars photo landing process. Robert Post, JPL, they all looked at these photographs and they all said, we can't duplicate them. Who did the analysis? And when they say we don't know, then I say, well, why don't you look into it? Why don't you look into the reality of what we did, because we're the only ones that have the samples, the documentation to it. No one has ever asked us for it. So I know no one else has ever run all of the physical evidence through any form of analysis. And when you've got four different, very strong types of physical evidence, and no one's been able to duplicate one, much less all four, then I ask them to think. Get in, read the books. We have a documentary coming out that we made in 1982. Watch the documentary. You'll learn a lot from that. You'll see the laboratories we went to. You'll see the people. You'll listen to Meyer, hear what he has to say. You'll see how the investigation unfolded. And if they'll do that, then they can make an informed decision. Otherwise, they're just following a party line. They're not thinking. And the goal is to be a thinking human. And we need to do that.
And Britt, it makes me think about the fact that people are more interested in who's with who. Who divorced who, right? And what happened to people? And they're more concerned about that than something so big that, Britt, when I think about it, all the things that we're concerned with and all the news and this and that, you're concerned about what's happening in Russia and Ukraine and Israel. But there's something much bigger happening out there, and people are not even sitting up and saying, you know, we need to go to higher levels and think about this. And Britt, why do you feel it is important to re-release the books now? Do you feel that the books are still relevant? In fact, if you ask me, I would just say that people have not even scratched the tip.
You're right. You're right, but I think they're more relevant today because in hindsight, we can see we didn't have personal computers. Meyer sure didn't have one. He was still washing his face in a horse trough. They didn't have indoor plumbing in their house. So when you look back at technology and just how far it's come in 45 years, there's no way he could have created all of this physical documentation. That's one thing, but the primary reason we really wanted the books to come out now is two things. First of all, there's a new generation coming forward. The youth has a much more open mind now than they did back in the 70s. They're more curious. That's important. Let them make decisions because it's going to be their generations going into space. We need to realize we're not the only thinking beings in the universe. And how are we going to react with those other beings, individuals, energies, once we are in space? We're talking about setting up outposts on Mars. Before long, we'll be talking about going further. We are going to have to learn to respect ourselves, our planet, our connection to each other, our connection to creation, before we can really go further into the universe. Because we're going to
colonization. Of Mars is what they're talking about.
Yeah, but we're going to have to respect all of those energies out there.
And not think that we're the only ones. And brings me to this question, do you feel that there's just Pleiadians, or do you feel that there are different areas of the universe that you, in your investigation, have come across or at least gotten a hint of?
Oh, yes. In our investigations, we found many different areas that, well, I'll give you an example. Arcturus. The Hopi Indians are very attached to the Pleiades, as well as Arcturus. Also, Sirius A, Sirius B, it's a dual binary system. In Africa, that is a star system that is worshipped because the Dogon tribes down there worship them, because they helped teach them how to farm without water. Different things like that. So they talk about this in all cultures. Gosh, almost every culture relates to the Pleiades, but also Aldebaran, Arcturus, Sirius A, Sirius B, obviously Betelgeuse. Different groups have different ones they're drawn to more, but the Pleiades and Arcturus seem to be the key groups that were here early on and continue to hold our fascination today.
No, in India, and I am an Indian, Indian, and a lot of people might have come in contact with different beings, and then here we call them gods, goddesses, and gods. And it could be that some of the gods and goddesses are actually aliens, and the others are gods, goddesses. So we don't really know the ratio and proportion of all of this. But I'm trying to say that from India, we believe in things that are not just of Earth. And if people could understand that this universe or universes or whatever it is much, much larger. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think of the government's release of UAP material?
I wish they'd do more. UAP is just another word for UFO. Why they changed the name, I really don't know. I think they feel that UFO carries a stigma, and so they were trying to shake that loose.
They just maybe think it's woo-woo,
Yeah,
you know?
exactly. Because it's got that stigma of being unusual and weird. I think we need to work harder to release more information. I think it's very important that this information come forward. There are going to be people that believe it and people that don't believe it. It's not really a matter of belief so much. When you have an experience, you know it. You know what's happened. If you have a sighting, you know you've seen something unique and unusual. So by bringing it out a little bit at a time and then turning around and saying, oh, it's national security, they're defeating the whole process. Right now, people need the ability to hear from experiencers, hear from contactees, even abductees, and all of the investigators, so that they can make decisions that are informed. And right now, you have to look for that information. And it's programs like yours that help bring this to the public. So I thank you for that, because we authors, we investigators, the experiencers out there, if it weren't for you and other hosts of podcasts and radio programming, there wouldn't be information out there. It would just be a dry well. And we don't need that now. As a civilization, we need to start growing. We need to start finding that harmony within ourselves. And maybe we can do it by expanding our knowledge base, learning about what's out there in the universe, and learning about, in the process, ourselves and each other.
Have you looked into abduction cases,
I
and
have.
what are your thoughts about them? I'm sure you must have.
Yeah, I've had many conversations with many abductees. Some are very serious and disruptive to the individual, very disruptive to their life. I know Dr. Roger Lear really looking at the implants that are put into quite often nasal cavities, and that was valid. I had seen the surgeries, that was real. But then I have talked to so many abductees and I ask them, what happened? How did this start? And quite often they'll tell me, well, I was driving along and I looked up, I saw this thing, I got out of my car and looked up, and then I started walking towards it. And I said, so you really weren't abducted, were you? You opened the door, you approached them, you said, I'm curious. And they probably looked at you and said, I'm curious about you too. So once you've had that kind of conversation and they get out of their own concept of fear, it's amazing that they change and realize that it hasn't been an abduction, but it's actually been a meeting of sorts that they are very comfortable with. But it's getting through that fear and that label of being abducted that's really hard for them.
So this abduction cases could just be meetings and communications. And
Sometimes.
do you feel that the government interfered with your work in any way? any government, Mexico, US, anything.
I think all governments are curious. I think all governments, I don't think they're doing the abductions. I do think in Mexico, they're probably the government that's going to come forward first and say, wow, extraterrestrial life really does exist. I think they will probably do that. They have so much evidence from down there. I mean, we have 10,000 videotapes from Mexico, footage of UFOs, daytime, nighttime, with known objects in the sky, with airplanes, with radio towers. It's amazing what's going on down there. It started in 1991 and it continues today. I think they'll be the first ones to be very open about, yeah, extraterrestrial life does exist.
Mexico and India have a lot in common. There are many things that I found that I find in India that I find in Mexico. I stayed there for 2 months, Mexico City and Cancun, went to, you know, the pyramids. And obviously, they're already used to many magical things going on in their country. And why does India and the Mayan calendar and the Mayans and India, you know, has that? The Maya and Mayans and everything. So why would something in India be there in Mexico where US is a different animal already? So there must be something that's taking it from one place to the other, communicating with these societies, even though Mexico is right next to US, correct?
Yeah.
There has to be something.
But, you know, India has such a rich history of unusual beings, like you said, that are gods and goddesses. They have such an oral history, a verbal history, the Sanskrit writings that tell of wars and battles and all of the things that we still do today, but taking place both above and here on earth. Mexico has the same thing. And it's really interesting when you start comparing those types of things. Mexico has, they don't look at them as gods and goddesses, but they look at them as Quetzalcoatl, came from the stars, different things like that. And it just correlates all over the world. It's really beautiful to get into the histories and do some correlative work, because inevitably you find these wonderful connections that just are so enlightening and opening, and you feel great about them when you kind of dig them up. I think those two cultures, and maybe one in Africa that I get off the top of my head, and the Inca civilization and China, are probably the oldest remnants of extraterrestrial contact.
And when you think about all of this, don't you feel, and I feel it right now, you know, inside, the kind of intuition or the gut feeling that we talk about, don't you feel that all of this that you're doing is all set to become really big? It's already big, but I'm talking of levels and huge proportions where people support this and they say, you know, we really want to know more, and we want to know more about our universe and our world. And what is this about government saying they need to lock down all of this UFO experiences for national security? How is it helping their national security? It should actually be pushing them back.
I sort of get that, because when they look at national security, they look at everything in an adversarial way. So they think, okay, if we shut it down, we could be shutting down knowledge that the public would gain about China or Russia if those craft belong to them. Otherwise, they're saying if they're from someplace in the universe, they're more powerful than we are. And that becomes a big national security issue. And the reason for that is if they just appeared and said, okay, I'm here, what would happen? Our stock market would collapse. The global economy would collapse. Half the people would believe it. Half the people wouldn't. It would be just a massive division instead of any form of cohesive understanding of what was going on. I think Earth humans have to grow a little more before that happens, but I do feel like something is very close to being real here, where it will open a lot of hearts and a lot of minds.
And as an Indian, the reason I'm bringing all of this in is because of a massive, massive belief in otherworldly beings. We have something, and I identify it in myself, we have something called devotion and faith. It just comes with us. And so we put our faith in God or a superpower that is not the government. We ultimately believe in higher powers. We don't have to, depend on the government and all of this. And it's something that the government is afraid of, that people might take their beliefs and put it in on something else and they lose power.
Yes, I think that's a big, big part of it. Because, and one of the reasons that they keep pushing the fear on us is we need to be afraid to be controlled. And the more we are afraid of something awful happening, whether it's ET's landing and crashing the stock market or an earth change issue where we actually have a volcano or a tsunami or something like that, if they keep us being afraid of things, we're much easier to control. So we have to learn how to step out of that fear. I don't think we're ready yet to really examine why we hold on to fear so tightly, but we do. And it's unfortunate because it really holds us back. It keeps us in kindergarten, and we never get out of that little grade there. It's sad.
Yes, and what are your personal thoughts about extraterrestrial life visiting Earth? Have you ever seen anything, any craft? Have you ever had any experience personally?
Yeah, I have never seen a being, an extraterrestrial being. I have seen craft. I've seen dozens of craft in Mexico. Down there, they have a little place called Casita Blanca that's outside the town of Atlixco. And you climb up this hill. It's just outside Puebla. It's really a cool place. You climb up this hill, and there's families there waiting for UFOs to come in. And they do, and they come in and they do loop-de-loops around each other, and they make right angle turns, and they pop in and pop out, and different shapes, and moving at really fast rates, and then stopping. So, yeah, I've seen those. I had another sighting with my parents. We were driving to California, and it was a beautiful January snowy night. It had snowed, but the skies were clear, full moon. My mom and I were on the passenger side, and we looked out the window and we saw these little green and red dots just floating around, flying in circles around each other. And before long, here comes this huge, massive craft. It was similar to a large tube, but with kind of a rounded arrowhead on the front of it. And then the little green and red dots flew up into it. Mom and I got my dad to finally stop the car. He got out of the car and he looked up. He says, "Where would you land that thing?" Because it was so huge. And then the next thing was, "What's its propulsion?" It's quiet. There was no sound. And the interesting thing was, there were several trucks, 18-wheel trucks, that stopped behind us, got out, watched this thing. One gentleman had his 35-millimeter camera and he was taking pictures of it. He ch exchanged numbers with my dad. They got back in touch later. All of the footage was like it had been exposed, like somebody had opened the back of his camera and it had all been exposed. So he didn't get any pictures of it. But yeah, that was quite a sighting.
This is such an exciting life to lead, Britt.
It
Honestly,
is.
if you think of the, okay, I don't want to call anybody's life normal and ordinary, but I mean, your life is something else. Do you feel that, and I want to ask you this, is it because our eyes, our ears are structured and constructed in a certain way that many of us and I'm not including myself in this, but many people can't see it because, but just because we can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. It
That's
just
true.
means that, I'm sorry?
That's true. That is very, very true. And even some of the extraterrestrials say they can cloak it so that one person will see it and the other person standing next to them won't. So that's true too. But I think we are geared mentally to respond to things differently. And sometimes you will see something and sometimes you won't.
And it, like, I just want to tell everybody here, just because we can't see it or hear it, it doesn't mean that it's not there. It just means that our eyes and our sensory organs are not equipped. Not many people's are equipped. Maybe a few people, divine grace, whatever it is, they're able to do it and see it. Even fairies and angels, some people see and others don't, but that doesn't mean that it does not exist. May I ask you, Britt, do you believe every case is real, or is there
Oh,
some cases that...
great question. I believe cases that I can get thumb on at evidence. That's my investigative thing. I need to have that physical evidence to be 100% behind it. But I do believe that everybody that has an experience, whether it's a sighting or whether it's an abduction or a contact, they have that truth. I don't hold Billy Meyer's truth. I can only say the evidence supports what his claims are. Billy has that truth. That's his. I've learned over the years not to judge, not to say one is real and one isn't, but to respect the fact that they are willing to share that information, because it may be coming to them on a physical level. It may be coming to them on another level that I don't even understand and can't comprehend. But I think it's important that we let everyone have their experience as theirs. And as an investigator, I do have to respect that. So I listen carefully to anyone that has had an experience because I learn from it, and hopefully it helps them by releasing some of that information.
And if
Makes
anything,
sense?
It completely makes sense, and which is why I'm coming to the next question. If someone sees, and this is for everybody listening there and all the future people, because there are thousands and thousands of downloads of our show post its airing. So if anybody listens to the show right now or later on, if someone sees an object or films one, what should they do? Is there something that they can contact you? Is there anything that you can suggest?
Do not send it to the U.S. government, please. Sorry.
Okay, everybody listening here, you heard this.
Yeah, because they just put it in a box somewhere. No, you can send it to me. There is word out, and I don't know this for a fact, but I have been a big proponent of creating a space where people can post their stories, their information, whatever their experience was pertaining to UFOs, UAPs, photographs, videos, whatever. But there needs to be a repository for all this information so we can learn from it. Because what is the purpose of having it if we can't learn from it? I've heard that there are several groups coming together that are going to create this beautiful repository where people will be able to submit stories and without judgment, which is so important. In the meantime, if you want to send them to me, I will be happy to forward them to this group when they get everything together. I think that that is just an enormous necessary issue at the moment, because we have got to be in a place before long where we are really willing to learn. We want to study. We want to explore all that's happening out there and correlate the different cases, correlate the information. We need to be prepared for moving forward in life. We need to have that connection with each other without judgment. in that connection with each other, we're connecting to ourselves too. And we're also connecting to creation. And that's key. Just having that whole group.
Is there any address that you can give them right now? An email address, a phone number,
sure.
a website, something that they could, as a start, like what is the first step they can do? They have a video or they have an experience, a photograph, even just an experience, not
right.
backed by photos and videos.
Exactly.
Correct? Because there could be people who are not taking photographs like Billy Meyer.
That's
and
true.
Yet we want to believe them. So what should they do? What is the email address? Or
they can send
anything?
It to me, Brit@BritElders.com. And that's one T in Brit, BritElders.com. That's my website. You can go see what I've written, what I do. And the email is attached there. So just if you have something you want to share, I will get in touch with this group so that the material that you send me can then be forwarded to them. It's so necessary to learn from all of this right now. We're at a crossroads in our world. We're moving forward faster with technology than we are with our spirit and our knowledge base. And we need to kind of catch up there so that the technology doesn't go to waste, but all of the information can fuel us and feed us and nourish us so we can learn from it.
What is the public value of all of the information coming out now? And by public value, anything that it does for the world, like will the people of this world get something, gain something out of all of this information?
The first thing they're going to gain is a wake-up call. I really believe that. If this information is all brought forward, as these groups are talking about doing, and just put out there so people can go look, it's the curiosity that drives the creativity. And then in the curious aspect of it, they start to think because they're asking questions. And if you're asking questions, you're learning about yourself and you're learning about what you're questioning as well. So it's important. And that's what I think they'll gain from it. Inside inner knowledge of self and exterior knowledge of all the things going on out there. We get locked into our little squabbles, whether it's a family squabble, friendship squabble, countries squabbling with each other. And you know, the whole universe is so much bigger than that. We've got to get past that. And the only way we can do it is by knowledge.
And Britt, would you say that with countries warring with each other right now, even and in the past, if they even paid attention to the fact that there could be superpowers out there watching them, wouldn't they feel ashamed and stop this and in fact work together as a whole?
They should. It's hard to get out of that concept, not from your culture, because your culture gets it. But it's hard to get out of the culture, this concept that we're the only thinking ones here. And so our little world is our little playpen. But we have to realize there's a whole universe out there. And that's the real playpen. We need to, we have got to learn.
What do you hope to see in the future for this subject of UFOs and extraterrestrial visits and spaceships? And what do you hope? Because you have a wish too.
I do. And I hope to see the topic taken seriously by more people. The topic used as a platform to learn from. And not to sound preachy, but one of the things I think we really have to learn is to lose the judgment. We judge each other on so many levels, and we're not being fair to ourselves or to that other person. So if we can get past that, that's what I hope to see. I hope to see this blossom to a discussion where we can learn more about ourselves, our world, each other, and what's out there. And it sort of covers everything. Because if you have that, like I told you, Billy has that inner harmony in himself. If you have that working for you, there's nothing that can stop you. It's that curiosity of the creativity that just flows out there. And it really does pull people together beautifully.
That's so amazingly said. And Britt, we do want you on future shows. You are very, very important because you're one of those people who connect the other world to this world and who's bringing this message to people. We want you back on our shows in the future.
Oh, thank you.
But thank you. And I'm hoping that people out there, anybody who has information and experience, do contact Britt. It's Britt@BrittElders.com.
Yes.
There you
Yes.
go. And so, Britt, we are at the end of our show and we want to sign off, though I do want to thank you for taking your precious time and coming here and talking to all of us and educating us. And we want you back. I hope you come back on our
I
shows anytime.
definitely will. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. And for everybody out here, I want to say good night to Britt and thank her for coming here and joining us. And please do contact her if you have any information. And this is Sugandhi Iyer signing off for the Joyful Manifestation Show and wishing you a fantastic rest of the day.
Thank you.
The Joyful Manifestation Show is now broadcasting live on over 100 digital stations. These stations include 24 foreign stations in over 13 countries and social media websites, which include Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. You can hear us live on iTunes, Spreaker, LA Radio FM, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, AHA Radio, and more. And you can always catch the podcast for the Joyful Manifestation Show on iHeartRadio, among others. Joyful Manifestation Show is heard all over the world. We'll take you where you want to go.